So when I was 5 years old, we took a trip from our house in Reno to visit my grandparents down in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I remember my parents telling me that we could stop at the state line, right where Nevada becomes California. They got me all excited about being able to stand with one foot in each state. But when we pulled off the freeway at the state line and I stood there with one foot in each state, it was a bit of a letdown. I don't know if I was imagining that the state line was going to look like it did on the map that was taped to my bedroom wall, or like the United States puzzle that I like to put together. But the lack of clear, sharp, colorful delineation was very disappointing. There was no bright line running between my feet, and the dirt and the plants looked the same in every direction. It was a moment of confusion, and it was a moment of disillusionment. It was the moment that I realized that borders are pretend. They were made up by people, and everyone just went along with it. They were invisible, and their existence was as hard to prove as that of my imaginary friends. Borders define and delineate physical space and keep separate the systems at play on either side. Systems like laws and economics, languages and cultural customs. All of these, the borders and the systems, are human-made, agreed upon and somewhat arbitrary in that they don't correspond with natural geographic divisions always. Borders and boundaries can also be used to delineate who is in and who is out of a social group. Belonging to an exclusive club has long been a marker of wealth in white society. The whole point of a club is exclusion. Those who are in the club set the rules about who may be included and who will be excluded. As a kid, I experienced being on both sides of that inclusion and exclusion. I was part of a handful of kids on our cul-de-sac who built a really cool fort at Stacy's house in the side yard. Then we got together and decided which of the other kids from the neighborhood were allowed to know the secret knock that would let them into our fort. When I was new to the neighborhood, I had been the kid who wasn't included. It felt much better to be the part of the in-group doing the deciding than one of the kids who was left out. I felt important and special. More important and special, in fact, than the kids who we decided we didn't want to come inside our fort. How dissimilar is that, really, from the way nations decide how many people and from which countries may gain entrance at their borders? From the outset, the U.S. has set quotas that welcomed many, many more Northern Europeans than people from non-white, non-Christian parts of the world. Just last year, the president attempted to put in place what has been called the Muslim ban, barring entry for people from countries where Muslims are the majority. The white Christian majority is afraid of losing their important and special status in our nation. Today, more and more places in the world are now riddled with violence and poverty. People are trying to escape their war-torn homelands, running for their lives and the lives of their children, desperate to find a place of safety. So imagine for just a minute that you are being chased through the countryside by somebody who is actively shooting at you. You come to a house and you knock on the door and you say, "You've got to let me in. There's a guy chasing me. He's trying to kill me." And what if they said, "Oh, I'm sorry, we already have friends over, and we have a rule that we only have 4 extra people in our home, so there's no room for you. Sorry, good luck." Our country is essentially doing this right now. We are keeping people out, even when they are seeking asylum, because of the violence that they are facing in their home country. And the justifications that we hear in the news is that these people are terrorists and criminals, and they are trying to take your job. These people don't want your job. These people want to not live in terror. I want to share with you an excerpt from an incredibly powerful poem. This is by Warsan Shire. You may have heard it. It's called Home. And Warsan Shire is a British woman. She was born in West Africa, and her parents are Somali. She writes, "No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. You only run for the border when you see the whole city running as well. Your neighbors running faster than you, breath bloody in their throats. The boy you went to school with, who kissed you dizzy behind the old tin factory, is holding a gun bigger than his body. You only leave home when home won't let you stay. No one leaves home unless home chases you. Fire under feet, hot blood in your belly. It's not something you ever thought of doing until the blade burned threats into your neck. And even then, you carried the anthem under your breath, only tearing up your passport in an airport toilet, sobbing as each mouthful of paper made it clear that you wouldn't be going back. You have to understand that no one puts their children in a boat unless the water is safer than the land. No one burns their palms under trains, beneath carriages. No one spends days and nights in the stomach of a truck feeding on newspaper unless the miles traveled means something more than a journey. No one crawls under fences. No one wants to be beaten, pitied. No one chooses refugee camps or strip searches where your body is left aching, or prison, because prison is safer than a city of fire. And one prison guard in the night is better than a truckload of men who look like your father. No one could take it. No one could stomach it. No one's skin would be tough enough. I want to go home, but home is the mouth of a shark. Home is the barrel of the gun. And no one would leave home unless home chased you to the shore, unless home told you to quicken your legs, leave your clothes behind, crawl through the desert, wade through the oceans, drown, save, be hunger, beg, forget pride. Your survival is more important. No one leaves home until home is a sweaty voice in your ear saying, leave, run away from me now. I don't know what I've become, but I know that anywhere is safer than here. The truth of that poem hit me so hard when I was in Ajo, Arizona, back in August. I was with 60 other faith leaders on a mission of humanitarian aid. We were dropping bottles of water in the desert for migrants to find while they attempted to cross into the U.S. through the blazing heat. People are making the choice to walk through that unforgiving desert wilderness for days and weeks. Many of them do not make it. Many of them die trying. And those who do make it safely are quite often picked up by ICE or the Border Patrol, sentenced, imprisoned, and then deported back to the place that they were so desperate to leave. And yet, knowing how dangerous it is, how improbable the odds of making it to safety, hundreds and hundreds of people set out on this same journey every year. After spending just 90 minutes walking in the almost unbearable heat, I tried to comprehend what unimaginable situation these people are fleeing that makes this impossible journey seem like a better plan. And now, humanitarian aid workers who leave water and food and blankets in the desert are being targeted and punished. These passionate and selfless volunteers are receiving citations for littering. And the Border Patrol agents are known to slash open the water jugs, pour them out, that has been left to save somebody's life. Rules, laws, and borders are agreed upon human-created boundaries. They are the shoulds and the thou shalt nots of society. It is good and right to have guidelines to govern our behavior, but are there times when morality must be more highly regarded than the law? Are there certain situations where it is good and it is right to break or bend these rules that we have made up? What about when it's a matter of someone's life and death? Alexander Solzhenitsyn, in his collection of speeches that he gave in the United States in 1975 and 76, called Warning to the West. In this, he's talking at Harvard. He says, "At the present time, it is widely accepted among lawyers that law is higher than morality. Law is something which is shaped and developed, whereas morality is something inchoate and amorphous. This is not the case. The opposite is true. Morality is higher than the law. Law is our human attempt to embody the rules, to embody in rules a part of that moral sphere which is above us. We try to understand this morality and bring it down to earth and present it in the form of law. Sometimes we are more successful, sometimes less. Sometimes we have a mere caricature of morality, but morality is always higher than the law. This view must never be abandoned." Line he says that law is our human attempt to embody in rules a part of that moral sphere which is above us. Our laws are supposed to be a reflection of morality as we understand it. Do our society's immigration laws reflect morality? Or are they more like a club about inclusion and exclusion? About the ones in the club deciding who to let in so that they can continue to feel more important and special than those that they exclude. Our first principle as Unitarian Universalists is about honoring the inherent worth and dignity of each person. It's about seeing and honoring the divine spark in every single person, honoring that oneness that we share. The outcry of resistance to the oil pipeline at Standing Rock a couple of years ago was an example of when a higher morality called people to hold a standard higher than the law. The gathering of mostly indigenous people declared that politicians and oil companies do not have the authority to make the kinds of decisions that they were making. Decisions that would impact the earth, the water systems, and the people and animals that depend upon that river for clear, fresh water for generations to come. When do the principles of our faith require or even compel us to break the rules, to break the laws? Did my leaving water jugs in the desert violate the law? How about providing sanctuary for someone who will be deported back to a dangerous and terrorizing situation? Or protecting the earth by standing in the way of oil companies who would install fracking equipment? These are the kinds of questions that Unitarian Universalists are being asked to consider in these times. And here's what I know to be true. Love annihilates all borders. It crosses all of them, every single one. It operates the same way that neutrinos that leave the sun invisibly pass right through us and the earth itself at all times. Love sees no borders, no divisions, no separation. Love unites, and love awakens love in another. Thich Nhat Hanh again. We are here to awaken from the illusion of separateness. Especially in times like we are living now, it is important to remember that love, morality, is more important than the laws. We are called by our faith to see that honoring and protecting human lives is more important than obeying unjust laws. Love calls us to disregard the artificial borders of all kinds, especially the borders that we have erected in our own hearts that would keep us separate from others. Love calls us to kindness and compassion above all else. Love calls us to honor the spiritual well-being of all of our human family. Love calls us to honor, respect, and protect the integrity and the wholeness of this beautiful planet and all of the beings that live here with us. Love is calling us. Love is calling you. May we answer this call with the yes of our lives. May it be so. Amen. Blessed be.